I'm happy to speak with you diehards here at lunchtime about cellulosic feedstock production with a living mulch, and particularly focusing on this issue of nitrate leaching. I want to start by thanking my co-authors here, Bob Berkovich and Ken Albrecht, and at UW, some great agronomists to work with. It's been my privilege as a soil physics person to work with these good agronomists. This wouldn't happen without them. This morning, some of you may have caught the talk by Bruce Dale, and he was addressing this question, how near is cellulosic ethanol production? And his answer is, it's nearer than you think. And he gives some reasons why that might be the case. And I pulled out a sentence from his abstract, which I thought was quite good and quite relevant for our topic here today. If this is true, that cellulosic ethanol production is relatively near, then agriculture may be soon transformed in a way that we haven't seen in a long time in this nation. And not only that, he goes on to make the point, which I think very few people are making, we can shape the future of this renewable fuels industry if we're careful and wise. We have a brief moment here to shape this industry. And if we do it properly, we could achieve some very large environmental benefits. Now, that may not be in sync with what you normally think about when you think about cellulosic ethanol production. Could this really be a beneficial transformation? This is a photo that I like. It's from one of our field experiments this fall in Minnesota. This is after corn harvest, and beautiful golden color of the corn residue out there. And there is, I walked that field, there was not any soil to be seen anywhere in that field. An absolute thick mat of crop residue protecting the soil surface from erosion and providing valuable inputs for soil organic carbon, as we've heard so much about today. And seeing that, I would say that gold is good. That's a good color. We like to see that out on the landscape. You think about cellulosic ethanol production coming along and harvesting all that stover off, you might envision something like this. This is a corn silage field in the same area, same time of year. And now we have bare soil. It's prone to erosion and loss of soil organic matter. And when you see that, you might think, as I do, brown is bad. Okay? Simple terms. But I want to encourage us to think about a third way. What if we had a different color? This is a picture from our experiment in Arlington. This is a Cura clover living mulch after corn harvest. So this is, again, is silage harvest. The entire corn plant above ground has been removed. And we've got this beautiful Cura clover there. It's growing. It's providing inputs for soil organic carbon. It's fixing nitrogen for the subsequent crop. And it's reducing the potential for soil erosion. So in looking at that, I would say green is great. I suggest that we have an emerging opportunity due to the impending arrival of cellulosic ethanol production to implement some cropping systems that have radically improved environmental performance. And I would submit to you that one potential system is the living mulch system, Cura clover living mulch for corn production. This has been demonstrated by Ken's group already, Zimanchek et al. In 2000 and Alfelt et al. In 2004 have shown that this system can be managed agronomically in a successful way. Let me just give a brief background on Cura clover if you're not familiar with it. It's a legume, so it can provide nitrogen to the soil. And here's a key point. It's a perennial. It's very long-lived. I would say it's indefinite. Its lifespan is indefinite here. We don't really know how long a stand can last in the upper Midwest where I am at, but quite a long time, maybe 20 years or more. And it's part of that is due to the fact that it is a rhizomatous legume, so it's always filling in empty spots, and we see very little winter kill in this legume. It's very hardy for our growing conditions. It's native to the Caucasus region, Crimea, and Asia Minor. Here's what it looks like if you haven't seen it. You can see that we've got a really nice aggressive tap root, and then mostly petiole and leaf above ground, and then these rhizomes below ground giving rise to new plants. And you can see looking down on it, it just makes a nice carpet to protect the soil surface. Now, living mulch work is not particularly new. In the U.S., it's been studied since at least the 1950s, but there's always been a problem with competition with the main crop. But times change, and one thing that's changed recently is that we now have herbicide-resistant corn and other crops, but I'm going to focus down herbicide-resistant corn. For instance, the glyphosate-resistant variety that came on in 1998. This gives us some new options for managing competition between the living mulch and the main crop, and that's been demonstrated successfully in Wisconsin and also by the group out in Pennsylvania. Hypothetical benefits. Okay, what might be the environmental benefits of implementing this system on the landscape? Well, here are a few possibilities. Greater sustainably harvestable biomass yield relative to our conventional corn production systems. These are hypotheses. Reduce soil erosion, increase soil organic carbon, lower nitrogen fertilizer requirement, reduced nitrate leaching. These are hypotheses that we need your help to address. I'm going to focus on two of these today. These were objectives for our field experiment that we've done in Arlington the past few years. Just a location for Arlington, soil types of Plano silt loam soil. It's randomized complete block design with 4 reps. And the treatments were initiated in April 2006. So our control is the no-till corn, managed to have sufficient nitrogen. That was 90 kilograms per hectare the first year, 45 the second year. No-till corn and living mulch with 5 nitrogen rates from 0 to 90. Our instrumentation includes suction cup samplers at 1 meter depth and TDR sensors for soil water content, and also an on-site weather station that's maintained by Bill Bland as part of the AWON network. Just want to show you some pictures of what this looks like because it's so different from our conventional corn production system. So here's the beginning of the experiment. This is the Cura clover. You can see the control plots here. This is where Cura clover has been killed and does not, and we maintain that as Cura free from this point forward. And then we have broadcast suppression with herbicide on April 18th and band kill on April 25th with a second herbicide, corn planted April 25th. Skip ahead to June 20th. Now that Cura has received a second suppression with glyphosate and the corn is up and going strong, we get side dress nitrogen on June 6th. And here's what you have August 30th. Beautiful corn crop in the middle of this field of Cura clover. And if you look down underneath, you see the clover's there, it's ready, it's active, and it's ready to start using that sunshine as soon as we get that corn harvested off. Here's what we see after harvest. In the foreground now, again, you see one of our control plots here. The Cura's been killed, just some dandelions coming on there. And you can see a living mulch plot in the back, just to give you the contrast. This is October 11th. Okay, I want to get right to the data on nitrate leaching. That's really my emphasis in the project. And initially, you can see all the treatments start off the same. This was just a uniform field of Cura clover initially, till it was killed in April 06. The control plots were killed. And then over time, we see the differences emerge. And we see with no Cura, so our control treatment here, we reached nitrate concentrations peaking near 55 parts per million at 1 meter depth. And let me go back to that. And you see at in the Cura, the living mulch with 90 pounds or 90 kilograms of nitrogen added, concentrations peaking around 20, and with no added nitrogen, concentrations peaking around 10 parts per million. So we saw drastic reductions in the nitrate concentrations in the leachate. So we went back and I flow weighted the nitrate concentrations over 6 month intervals. And here are the results. And the first thing I want to point out is let's compare our control to the living mulch plus 90 pounds of N. And what you see going down through these 3 6-month periods is about a 50% reduction of the nitrate concentration by the presence of the living mulch. If we compare the control with the living mulch plus no added nitrogen, we see about a 75% reduction going down through these 3 6-month periods. And interestingly, on the living mulch with no nitrogen added, you can see that we're producing corn and the leachate concentrations for nitrate are staying at or below the drinking water standard for nitrate. Now I want to go from nitrate concentration now and try to get at nitrate load. And to do that, we use a water balance. Here's precipitation, which of course is a major term in the water balance. 2006, we were above the 30-year average for that site. 2007, we had an important dry period, May, June, and July, so that by the end of July, we're about 100 millimeters below average precipitation. So relatively dry conditions for that region. So we take the precipitation data, we calculate crop evapotranspiration using the FAO 56 method, and then we account for changes in soil water storage across these 6-month periods, and then we can estimate the drainage amounts in these two different treatments. And our control, you can see transpired just a bit less water than the living mulch. This difference mainly occurs early in the growing season. The result is you have a bit more drainage under the control. So the living mulch has reduced the drainage volume a bit. Dormant season, we see very little difference in the drainage. And then again, in the second growing season, you see that it is drier. We had less drainage overall, but still the living mulch reduced the drainage a bit. Cumulative reduction in drainage was 18% cumulative reduction in drainage. As a fraction of precip, that's dropping it from 27% of our precip to 22% of our precip going to drainage. Okay, so now we can calculate nitrogen load. You take your flow-weighted nitrate concentration, multiply it by your drainage amount for each of those three seasons. So here you see growing season 1, dormant season 1, and growing season number 2, and you see dramatic reductions in the nitrate load by the presence of the living mulch. 58 to 78% reduction in the nitrate load by the presence of the cura clover living mulch. And that's coming both from a reduction in the concentration as well as reduction in the drainage volume. Okay, let's get to reality. Okay, reality is governed not only by environmental benefits but also economic sustainability. If we're talking about an economic environment where only corn grain has economic value, it would be difficult for the living mulch system to compete on a consistent basis. In our experiment here at Arlington and also at Lancaster, Bob had another site there at Lancaster, there was a yield reduction by the presence of the living mulch. We're still growing high yielding corn in the living mulch even with no added nitrogen, but it's not as high as the control. And as a result, there's an economic penalty here for adopting the living mulch if it's grain only. However, if we look at corn silage, okay, it's our closest current analogy to cellulosic ethanol feedstock production. So we look at silage production in the living mulch. Economically, that can be very competitive with corn grain production as it exists now, particularly if you account for nitrogen savings that are possible under the living mulch system. You can have much lower nitrogen rates. You might say, well, what about this other number here, 905? That's the highest number on the chart. That's true. You can maximize your short-term economic gain by harvesting every bit of above-ground biomass and using it for, at this point, silage, maybe in the future, cellulosic ethanol production. But I would suggest to you that in almost every case, that is not sustainable in the long run. I think we know it as scientists, and I think in large measure the farmers out there know it as well. Okay, I want to conclude with this quote. It's from Annex et al., Crop Science, this year. The demand for lignocellulosic biomass as a feedstock may allow the introduction of new crops and cropping systems. Living mulch, as an example, may be able to produce large amounts of biomass while improving resource use efficiency and reducing environmental impact. The data that we're beginning to see would support that hypothesis. So I welcome at this point your questions on this, but also your participation in this line of research, which I think is quite important at this time. Thank you.
Do we have time for a question for Tyson, or if not, then for Dr. Laurie previously? None? One? Go ahead.
So did you try to assess where the 40 bushel yield hit came from?
Question is, did we try to assess where the 40 bushel yield hit came from? Yes, of course, we're very interested in that. And as a physicist, I'm particularly interested in the water stress component. That early season water use by the Keurig clover is very critical to manage that. So we believe that water stress may have played a role, especially in 2007. Another issue may be shading of the young corn plants. That may be an issue. Bob, in his data, looked at nitrogen response. There was no significant response to N-rate in the living mulch, so it doesn't appear to be primarily due to nitrogen. The living mulch is effectively providing nitrogen to the corn crop. Let me refer to Bob right in front of you there. About how wide would you say that strip was? Okay, about 20 centimeters or so. And this was a pure no-till. One option might be to come in there and do some strip tillage to get better clearance, because Keurig clover is a rather prostrate plant, so even though you kill out 20 centimeters, the surrounding plants, you know, just kind of flop over into that zone to some extent.